What's going down, podcast listener? Welcome back to the Symbiosis Now podcast. I'm Tyler Colombaro, and I'm the host of the show. And on this show, we like to have a good conversation. Every episode, guaranteed. All in hopes of inspiring you to get out there and have your own open conversations with a friend, a family member, or maybe even your enemy. Each episode, we star a special guest where we have an in-depth, action-packed, often intellectual, spiritual, practically psychedelic, and all-inclusive types of conversation. And we have a good fucking time with it. So folks, you can find us online. We're the Symbiosis Now Network, where there's some links to the podcasts, plural podcasts, because we have a couple others underneath the network blanket. And without further ado, let us voyage into the yonder of conversation with our very special guest on the Symbiosis Now podcast. Folks, we are here with Brad Gonzalez, the man, the myth, the legend around Reedley and the greater 559 area. Bachelor's degree in history out of Fresno State, CSU. He's a substitute teacher, and he's a good one at that, but he knows his stuff, folks. And we're here to talk about some warlike activities today. We're going to talk about Ukraine, Russia. We're going to talk about Japan, hopefully. We're going to talk about some other nations. And I want to talk about the CIA on CNN a little bit at some point. So, Bradley, what you want to talk about first, big dog?
Okay, let's go with a Ukraine-Russia war update.
Yeah, let's do an update, because Bradley comes on every once in a while to enlighten me and the listener on the geographical scenario, what geopolitical situations at hand, what's going on with propaganda, and Bradley's really good at discussing this stuff.
Okay, so apparently, we were supposed to get the long-awaited Ukrainian counteroffensive, in which they tried to, in which the Ukrainians tried to take back, you know, all the annexed territories from the east, especially Crimea. But that hasn't happened yet, or is about to happen. But they're kind of being a bit little patient about it because of logistic reasons, and you know, they need more weapons, more jets, all that jazzy jazz.
So Crimea is like, it's like off the coast.
It's a peninsula.
The Black Sea.
Yeah, in the Black Sea.
Below Ukraine, south of Ukraine, I think.
Yeah, kind of. Let's go open up the map here. I brought my laptop with me.
And I do encourage the listener, if you have a smartphone in front of you, like we all fucking do, get on there and type in some of these countries so you can know geographically where they are located, because it makes a difference than when you hear it on the narrative news. They're just talking about Crimea like it's some, you know, random sovereign nation far away from Russia just getting picked on. But it makes sense for it to be a strategic location in their operation, obviously.
Yeah, so the Crimean Peninsula is southeast of Ukraine, kind of sandwiched between, you know, Russia kind of right here.
Right.
Even has a road, highway leading into Russia, even though that the Russians claim Crimea for itself because they've had a rigged vote in 2014, which is almost 10 years ago. It's 9 years now since, you know, the rigged vote happened.
Yeah, it's crazy to see, like, geopolitical things play out over a decade and how things can get better or worse, you know?
Yeah, you see the peninsula here, Tyler?
Right.
Yeah, it's right here. Sevastopol right there is where the Russians have always had a naval base right there, even before, you know, after the Soviet Union fell and before it got annexed, they had to get a lease from the Ukrainians to use this as a navy base.
It looks like a strategic port.
Yeah, it's super strategic as well, like very strategic.
It would make sense that they'd want to maintain their location on this peninsula of Crimea. It also makes sense when the United States meddles in certain countries for the positions they wish to have access to.
That reminds me, the Russians accused us of interfering in Ukrainian affairs, like the Orange Revolution in 2004 and the Euromaidan unrest in 2013.
What was the Orange Revolution in 2004?
Check this out. It's my memory of this is kind of rusty. Like, I was very young and it was happening. Okay, let's look this up for better context so I know what I'm talking about.
Which we appreciate so much. Am I right, listener?
Yeah. Orange Revolution Wikipedia article was a series of protests and political events that took place in Ukraine from late November 2004 until January 2005 in the immediate aftermath of the runoff vote of the 2004 Ukrainian presidential election, which was claimed to be marred by massive corruption, voter intimidation, and electoral fraud. The capital was the focal point of the movement's campaign of civil resistance, with thousands of protests demonstrating daily. So you're having like a protest happening every flipping day of the week until January.
And this was in Ukraine.
Yes,
Ukraine. About 20 years ago.
Almost 20 years ago. It's about 19 years as of right now. 20 years would be next year.
Gotcha.
Yeah. The protests were prompted by reports from several domestic foreign election monitors, as well as widespread public perception that the results of the runoff vote of 21 November 2004 between leading candidates Viktor Yushchenko and Viktor Yanukovych were rigged by authorities in favor of the latter. The nationwide protest succeeded when the results of the original runoff were annulled, and a revote was ordered by Ukraine's Supreme Court for 26 December 2004, which is the day after Christmas. Under intense scrutiny by domestic and international observers, the second runoff was declared to be quote-unquote free and fair. The final results showed a victory for Yushchenko, who received about 52% of the vote, compared to Yanukovych's 45%.
That's still a pretty close race, though. 52% to 45%. That's pretty fucking close.
Yeah.
What's interesting to me, though, is that who was responsible for meddling in this election then? The Ukrainian politicians up top? Or was it Russia maybe trying to fuck with their voting system 10 years, 20 years ago?
It could be like, we could be support, well, because usually the opposition who lost his election, Viktor Yanukovych, let's see right here. Let's look up his article. Yeah, this was the dude that was exiled in during the Euromaidan protests in 2013. Like, he was like pro-Russia. Like, he was on Russia's D-I-C-K for...
And he was the president for a while?
Yeah, he was actually the president for, like, since... Let's see, when he was... Okay, here are his stats.
So, right. Russia's had some inside guys for a while in Ukraine.
Yeah, basically you have, like, a pro-Russian faction that wants to have closer ties with Russia and possible integration because they feel more Russian than Ukrainian, or, like, are very fond of Russia, because if you look back in history, there's a lot of, you know, meddling between the Russians and the Ukrainians, especially during the Russian Tsardom Empire, Soviet Union, All that jazz, you know? So basically, this guy who lost, Viktor Yanukovych, won and became president of Ukraine a couple years later in 2010 and got exiled in 2014 after the Euromaidan protests in 2013. Okay, so he's like pro-Russia, and Viktor Yushchenko is like pro-Europe, pro-Ukraine, like pro-Ukrainian independence and pro-European Union, you know, because Ukraine wants... Especially the West side wants to be more European, you know, wants to join a European Union, join NATO, you know, all of that stuff.
Which is so interesting to think about it, because it does matter geographically, and I guess geopolitically is the right term, because from half of the geographical country, you could say, on the eastern portion is generally more pro-Russian, and western is more pro-European.
Yeah,
but it's ironic because it's just a matter of what side the population is closer to and how much that influence affects how deep into the country of Ukraine it goes.
Yeah, I mean, it's not just Ukraine, too. Like, there are other countries that may think a certain way depending on where they live.
Right.
Like, the more rural areas tend to be more conservative-leaning, while the more urban city areas... Oh, that's my phone. I should put this joint on silent.
Hell yeah. Can't let the Russian propagandists influence us in the middle of a podcast. I know you're one of the spies, Bradley. No, I'm just kidding.
Yes. Like I said, like, the more rural areas of the United States tend to be more conservative-leaning, you know, like the farmers and the cattle ranchers, especially here in the valley, while those in the urban cities like New York, San Francisco, Seattle tend to be more liberal and progressive leaning.
So that's similar across the world, probably, really.
Kind of, though, except, you know, what happened when Ukraine between East and West is usually based on, you know, history with the Russians and, you know, how they view each other. Like, because the more east you go, you have more Russian speakers, and they are more likely to be see themselves as being more Russian than Ukrainian. But if you go west, you have more Ukrainian speakers, and if you see themselves as more part of an independent Ukraine,
right?
More so, even European though, because they want to be closer to Europe. Which, you know, that reminds me. You ever heard about this Canadian province called Quebec?
Quebec. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a French-speaking province in Canada.
I.e. British Columbia. Yeah, I get you.
Yeah, Quebec is east, going eastward, almost to Ontario and Newfoundland and Prince Edward Island. Yeah, that reminds me of how there's a bunch of French speakers because of French influence in Quebec and in Canada. That's why, you know, in Canada, you know, kind of like here, you have, you know, Spanish and English here, especially in California.
Right.
And up there you have English and French, especially if you go toward more, especially in Quebec. And not to mention that Quebec has some separatist movements that want to secede from Canada and become their own French-speaking country. Although there are some extremist factions that resort to violence and want to eradicate all non-French speakers from Quebec.
Wow.
Yeah, that's why, you know, Quebec is considered to be like the, by some in Canada, to be the worst province in Canada, or the laughingstock of Canada.
Really?
Yeah.
See, I never knew that. I don't think the general public of the United States knows that or thinks about that in that light.
Yeah.
That's really interesting, though.
I mean, I'm sure people know that Quebec is known for being a predominantly French-speaking province.
I think you're right, yeah. But, like, they don't think about why,
Yeah, they don't even know, you know, why, like, that even the separatist movements, that they even almost went after the Canadian Prime Minister in the 70s to the point where the Canadian Prime Minister had to send the freaking Canadian Army to hunt them down, too.
That Canadian Prime Minister is kind of a weirdo. Trudeau?
Yeah.
It's kind of a trip.
I was actually talking about his dad, Pierre Trudeau. Oh. Yeah, his dad was prime minister for like a while.
So he was corrupt too?
I guess.
Corruption runs in the family? No.
Yeah.
Who'd have thought?
Yeah, so, yeah, I just thought about bringing up Canada.
No, and the reason why we're talking about it, you're right, to bring the conversation full circle, is because this, what is it considered, a province, not a, like a state in Canada, is Quebec, and they speak heavily French because they're still heavily influenced by France when France was Canada, essentially. Uh-huh. Yeah. And now, like, we're talking about Ukraine and how closer to the eastern portion of Ukraine, obviously, is a little more pro-Russian just by default, just by sheer amount of people that are closer to Russian-speaking, Russian influence, actual Russia. I'm sure people cross the border back and forth all the time and blah, blah, blah over the last, like, 4 or 5 decades or whatever, you know?
Yes, and
versus on the eastern portion, more European, maybe they'd be going back and forth to, like, Poland and whatever the fuck else is on that side of Ukraine, right?
Yeah, and thing is that, you know, a lot of the, you know, westward, you know, countries bordering Ukraine, like Poland and on top Poland, like very anti-Russia, like they want payback.
Right.
Yeah, some even joke about, like, oh, Poland ain't in NATO because of their safety. They want revenge.
Which I think is kind of dangerous, though, because, like, we often act like we back Poland. I mean, right? Like, the United States is like, well, they're in NATO and they're right there and blah, blah, blah. We always got Poland's back. But it's like, yeah, but what if Poland's like, fuck that, we're going to war with Russia? We still are going to just go to war with Russia because we back Poland? Like, that's kind of strange.
Yeah,
like, it's so interesting to see us all dance. All I'm trying to say is it's so interesting to see us all dance around warfare and us still not have gotten to full-on war yet.
Yes.
And it makes me feel like there's a lot of the story we still we haven't discussed and we still don't know.
Uh-huh.
And what I mean by that is that perhaps this is all just a money-making operation. It's not about influence as much as it is about maintaining influence. It's not about expansion. It's more about maintaining the influence in the area.
Yeah,
right?
There are a lot of ulterior motives to this besides intelligence gathering, money, you know, defense contracts.
Resources, so much more, for sure.
Yeah, and now going back to the Orange Revolution in Ukraine, like you have Russians, you know, accusing the United States and other Western-backed powers of interfering with it, although we also have the story about Russians interfering the pro-Russian side of things. So, yeah, there's like a back and forth, you know, argument on who was there, who was trying to influence, you know.
Right.
Yeah, and even Russian nationalist circles try to link the Orange Revolution to fascism, too, right here, according to this article as well. And there are even some anti-Orange protests in Russia that were protesting it as well, so it seems.
That's interesting.
Yeah, and... yeah, so that was pretty much Orange Revolution. Now, the Euromaidan, you know, what do you call it? Unrest in 2013 was when...
there say it again, what's it called?
The Euromaidan Revolution.
Euromaidan.
Yeah, Euromaidan. Euromaidan.
Google it, folks.
Yeah, it's spelled E-U-R-O, Euromaidan, M-A-I-D-A-N, Maidan. Euromaidan. Also known as the Revolution of Dignity, took place in Ukraine February 2014 at the end of the Euromaidan protests, in which deadly clashes between protesters and state forces in the capital Kiev culminated in the ousting of President Viktor Yanukovych and a return to the 2004 Constitution, and it led to the outbreak of the hostilities that we see, that we've been seeing for the past decade almost, to the point where it escalated last year with the invasion and everything else.
Wow. And so this I mean, this Euromaidan, like, it is partially responsible for where they were at.
Yeah, basically, we could all date, you know, everything going on to this protest, which actually started in November 2013 when a wave of large-scale protests known as Euromaidan began in response to President Yanukovych's sudden decision not to sign a political association and free trade agreement with the European Union, instead choosing closer ties to Russia. So basically, they were supposed to sign like an association agreement with the European Union, thus making Ukraine more European aligned and influenced, but he decided, you know what, fuck that, excuse my language, I'm gonna go, you know, scrap this European Union agreement and just go, you know, go with my homies in Russia. And that pissed off Ukrainians so much. I mean, you had protests, you had riots, freaking police beating on them, freaking snipers shooting at each other. Like this picture, though, on a Wikipedia article. Like, look.
Right,
like,
right. I'm looking at it, too.
Flames and stuff.
Right. I'm looking at it. And it looks pretty wild, folks. You want to talk about a photo of civil unrest? Google the Revolution of Dignity. Man, that is some wild shit. And also, something that you just said that we need to touch on is that there were police beating the fuck out of their own people because they demand that they comply with their narrative. And that is a really interesting thing to take note of, because in any country, wherever the fuck you are, where there's humans and they feel some type of way and you have some authoritarian type of aspect of your government military operation come in and force people to comply, there's a problem. For sure. That is not democracy in any way, shape, or form. Yeah. And it happens in America, too. Let's not forget. That's why I want to bring it up.
Yeah, and look at all these photos, too. Like, trucks have been carrying troops were burned in Kiev city center. Protesters throwing bricks and cocktails at cops. Protesters building a barricade.
And this basically, from what I'm reading and you're discussing, is it led to the annexation of Crimea.
Yes. Oh, here's a video on the Wikipedia article.
Which eventually led to the Russian-Ukrainian conflict.
Independence Square. That was Kiev.
We're looking at a video of Kiev burning, bro. People are everywhere. There's flames everywhere. There's bombs, bro.
Well, not bombs. Well, maybe mini bombs, like we
like
just
fucking saw. Molotov cocktails and shit. Though I'm saying, like, there's balls of fire that people are throwing and shit.
Ukraine was freaking lit as f.
Dude, so these guys are already used to some kind of protesting, fighting back against their whatever they're not believing in.
Yeah, I mean,
they're primed for this proxy.
I mean, I'm sure they've been, you know, protesting against Russia and stuff since the Soviet days or the Russian Empire, like, oh snap,
right.
Burning of the Euromaidan headquarters and trade unions building. Protesters burning tires of Kiev Conservatory to obscure snipers. Like, they have freaking snipers shooting at
them. So, what you're saying here is the Ukrainians are burning down governmental buildings.
Yeah.
They're not fucking around.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah, they were not screwing around there, you know?
No, they weren't. That is wild to think, bro.
Ooh, you even have protesters shooting back at the snipers, too.
So, against their own government, though, wasn't Russia. This is what we're talking about right now is Ukraine versus Ukrainian people over Russian ties and influence, essentially, right? But it's not like directly with Russia, or is it because they had their politicians in their back pocket?
Basically, Ukrainians fighting Ukrainians with Russian sympathies.
Wow. Well put.
Yeah, like, it was crazy stuff. We even had a Ukrainian foreign exchange student happening here at Reilly High when this was happening, too.
I remember.
Yeah, crazy bananas freaking shit going on, I should say. And eventually, this is all what led up to, you know, what's going on right now. And now, going back to the present, like the counteroffensive to take back, you know, East Ukraine hasn't started, but it's about to happen, but not yet. We thought it would happen right now. Although we had some pretty interesting developments, such as...
Hello, everybody. This is Tyler Colombaro, the host of the Symbiosis Now podcast, as well as the host of the Cali Ag podcast, which is new. It is launching. It's ready for you to hear. Here's a little intro clip to get you enticed. I hope you can go check it out on Spotify and all the platforms out there. Check it out. Welcome to the Cali Ag podcast. I'm Tyler Colombaro, and I'm the host of this podcast. This podcast will ultimately be an exploration into all aspects of California agriculture, from the crops, to the land, to the water. Listener, if you were not aware, the state of California provides an unquantifiable amount of produce to the world. We will feature guests on each episode that work and lead the agricultural trajectory and symbiosis within the state of California. So listener, join us. Tell your friends and tell a farmer about the Cali Ag podcast.
Such as a Kremlin getting bombed by a drone. Let's see if I can find a footage of the Kremlin getting smacked by a drone. Yeah, this was all over the news. Like, I woke up one morning and I saw it. I was like, what the
Which was recent. You sent me this.
Yeah, super recent.
This was maybe a few weeks ago. This is in May. We'll just say that. This happened in May.
Yeah, it was this month.
Oh, so this was a drone that
was taken down and it crashed into the roof of the Kremlin. After
so
being
it was
down.
About, it was going by the Kremlin.
Yeah.
And they shot it down.
Yeah, they thought, yeah, they... originally blamed it on Ukrainians, saying, like, oh my gosh, this is an attack on the Kremlin.
Allegedly, though, right? Allegedly. Because we don't know.
And then they tried to pin the blame on us because we support Ukraine and stuff, and we were giving them information.
For those that don't know, let's enlighten people on what the Kremlin is.
The Kremlin is supposed to be like kind of like the White House of the Russian Federation,
which is located in
Moscow,
in Moscow, the capital.
Yeah, Moscow.
So it is like their White House base, basically. Then.
Yeah.
Or is it closer to their capital?
It's in the capital.
Is it more like the January 6th location? What the fuck was that called? The Capitol building or whatever.
I'm not sure about it would be the same thing as that though. I would say it's like the White House kind of.
Got you. So this is where Putin rests his little dome.
Yeah, but thing is, Putin wasn't there when the drone
How happened. Convenient. Why the fuck were they trying to fuck with it then? Just
I don't
to
know.
Send a statement but not actually kill Putin?
Yeah, there are some theories that that this was staged by the Russians as a propaganda stunt because this happened the week before they had their Victory Day parade, which was a huge military parade commemorating the Russian victory against the Nazis in World War II. Every year they have like a big-ass parade with tanks on the streets, soldiers marching, big-ass orchestra, jets flying overhead. So basically, they were trying to time this as a way to get the people riled up, saying, oh, this is a war that's coming to the homeland. We gotta defend this.
So it could have been, it could have even been the Russians themselves, making it look like we're being attacked right here in the heart of Russia to get the people riled up. Because if we did that in America, look at 9/11. When we got attacked on our soil, we were down to go. Just like when Pearl Harbor got bombed, all of a sudden we're ready to fucking fight the next day. Mm-hmm. You know, no time for mourning. We're ready to go. It makes sense that that's the response. But luckily, it doesn't seem like the Russian people feel like that. Or do they? Because we don't know.
Yeah, I mean, right? Yeah, I mean, there are some anti, you know, Putin anti-war protesters, and you have some pro-Putin people. Especially.
But they're not really allowed to do that there, right? Like in America's, in the U.S., like we get to somehow protest war in this weird way, even though it's illegal, but we still get away with it.
I mean, it's not illegal though. I mean, it depends on, you know, how it goes. But we have free speech. Well, Russia didn't really have free speech at all. Really, it has to be approved by the Kremlin. That's why their state dues agencies like TASS or RT are like heavily freaking sanctioned by the government and have to be go through government approval too.
So anything media about their own operations has to be approved by the Kremlin.
Yeah.
So it is kind of authoritarian in that way then.
Yeah.
And anti-free media.
Mm-hmm.
It's more like everything has to be propaganda.
Yeah, everything has to be propaganda.
Even though a lot of the media in the United States is propaganda, the mainstream stuff absolutely is.
Yeah.
But you get all these other forms of media that are still free and fair game and available to listen to.
Yeah.
They don't have to go through the White House for approval,
yeah,
right? That's basically what we could compare it to in a way, right?
Yeah, and then you also have your own biased little sources, you know.
Right,
that
of course.
Lean toward like a certain idea or a belief system. Though it's still independent, though. It's just biased toward one side.
What kind of religion are most Russians? Like, do they have a dominant national religion?
Oh,
kinda?
Yeah. They are Eastern Orthodox, which is which was originally part of the Catholic Church back then, but there was like a big schism, so they split off between East and West. So you have Roman Catholic and you have Eastern Orthodox. So it's like kind of like Catholic, but not really.
See, the fact that we don't understand any of this, like, maybe you do, but I'm saying the general public of the United States, it's really bold of us to just say that we don't like Russia or we're down to go to war with Russia because mm-hmm. we don't know anything about them. We don't understand their belief system. We don't understand where they're coming from. How would we understand how they'd fight? How would we understand how they react and respond to us bombing them? Blah, blah, blah. Well,
yeah.
We don't even know. When anybody could flip on the news, probably anywhere, and see how the American public is reacting to some kind of issue in the world. It's less sanctioned for some reason.
Yeah.
Like, I can't just call someone from Russia right now, right? Like, and just be like, hey, bro, what's really going on?
I mean, you could try to contact them in some way, so.
Via Telegram.
Mm-hmm.
Like the CIA.
Yeah.
Like, bro, I'm not in the CIA, I promise. I just want to know what's going on.
Yeah, that reminds me, you wanted to bring up the whole CIA trying to recruit Russians. Oh, yeah, it's here on Reuters. Kremlin says it's
I do
spies.
Want to talk about this. Yes,
yeah,
I do.
Yeah, so, yeah, Tyler brought this up saying he saw something on CNN.
I saw something on CNN this morning, and it was an old clip. It wasn't today's clip.
Yeah.
But it was on CNN, people. It was on fucking CNN.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about the Central Intelligence Agency, the CIA, literally putting out a commercial to the Russian public saying, spy on your own homeland for us and we'll give you some kickbacks. We'll send you money. That is American taxpayer dollars, folks, that are going to Russian citizens. I don't know. Are they considered citizens in Russia,
citizens,
even though it's not free? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, citizens, yes.
They're getting in on this action. We're paying random just citizens of Russia to tell us information. What if it's bullshit information? How is that getting past the Kremlin? How is that getting past the Russian government?
Yeah, that's crazy.
I don't understand. They
that's
must bananas. Be in cahoots somehow. Because how can the United States CIA just connect with a commercial, too? Where are they seeing this commercial? On Telegram is what I'm hearing. So apparently a lot of people in Russia, their main social media connection is Telegram because somehow it can be like on a VPN, all this kind of shit, and they can still see what's going on in certain worlds.
Yeah.
But the CIA is going that low using Tor, T-O-R, Tor.
Oh, yeah, the browser?
Yeah.
To access the dark web?
Yeah. So they're telling Russian citizens to access the dark web to spy on their own homeland and send that information to the CIA in the United States. I find that kind of hard to believe that that's actually what the fuck is going on,
yeah,
first of all. But I just couldn't believe that they're just bragging about this CIA commercial. Just saying that sounds stupid. But I remember also another commercial by the CIA that was released in 2020 during the crazy Black Lives Matter protests leading up to the 2020 election, leading up to January 6th riots. Everyone was in complete pissed off chaotic moods, right? I remember seeing on YouTube, I'm watching anti-establishment type videos on fucking YouTube, and a commercial pops up like they do. They make you watch it. You can't skip it, right? Those kind of commercials on YouTube. The CIA trying to recruit mass amounts of people to work for them. And I remember these commercials. I have a video of it on my old phone, even though it's all smashed. If I could retrieve it, it'd be awesome. But I bet you could probably even Google it on YouTube right now. And it was a commercial that was basically telling you or me, just a Joe Schmo, random bro, to just, you could be in the CIA too. We need your help to fight against domestic terrorism. You could see the commercial play out, and it looked like a bunch of dopes that don't know what they're talking about. They have no credentials. They have no background in crime or anything. Just looking at documents saying, well, it says this, but it could mean this. Like they're trying to break codes and stuff. But it's like, you know, that's the way that you recruit people that are not equipped to handle a job that is dealing with intelligence against their own American people? It's fucking weird. Yeah. That was 2-3 years ago, bro. Yeah. And now they're sending out commercials to Russia, the country that we're trying, quote unquote, to not piss off. Mm-hmm. We're mad at spies, right? We're mad at the guy, Buddy Boy Texera, or whatever the fuck his name was, that released the Ukrainian documents about us being over there and it not meaning anything. Mm-hmm. We shame that guy for spying, but now we're down to send our own intelligence agency and go, yeah, good job, good on you for doing that, to go spy on their country and give us information. Yeah. It's super interesting. I mean, it seems like you're heaping coals into a fire that you shouldn't be fucking with, but what does the CIA always do? They always expedite war.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, that stuff goes way back to the American Revolution days, like before the CIA. Like, we had spies, you know, going after spies, spying on the British for us too, for the colonies and stuff like that, you know.
Right. Spies have always been part of the war game. I'm just saying it's really interesting to watch the Central Intelligence Agency try to send a commercial to the country that we're trying to, I thought, not fight. But I feel like our government in the United States, in any way, shape, or form, the narrative on the mainstream news, everything, is always saying that we have to fight Russia. And it's scary. And it's almost really, really mind-blowing to sit back and be like, wow, we haven't gone yet. So it makes me feel like I still have faith in the American people, because we're all kind of like, but do we want to go do that? Like, we send them money, but that's all you're getting from us, because we don't really want to go to another war. I think most people feel that way. But the longer this goes on, it's already been a year. Most people are just like, Putin bad, Russia bad, Ukraine good, whatever it takes. Mm-hmm. And that's not really a good place to be in either, yeah. Because that means by default, we're down to go to war.
Yeah.
And possibly World War III, like it's been discussed as, right?
We got to avoid. All right, so this article, Kremlin says its spies are watching as CIA urges Russians to get in touch. The Kremlin said on Tuesday its agencies were tracking Western spy activity after U.S. Central Intelligence Agency published a video encouraging Russians to make contact via a secure internet channel. So let's open up this article on Reuters. Let's see. The Kremlin said on Tuesday its agencies are tracking Western spy activity after the CIA published a video on secure internet channel. The short video in Russian was accompanied by a text saying the agency wanted to hear from military officers, intelligence specialists, diplomats, scientists, and other people with information about Russia's economy and leadership. Contact us, perhaps the best people around you don't want to hear the truth. We want to, the text said. Published nearly 15 months into Moscow's war with Ukraine, the video invites Russians to take a colossal risk. President Vladimir Putin has warned his compatriots to be on the guard against traitors, and Parliament last month voted to increase a penalty for state treason to 20 years in life in prison. In the video, published on the CIA's official YouTube channel and Telegram messaging app, popular in Russia, a male voice reflects on the meaning of heroism and endurance as lone individuals are seen weighing their decisions. A man trudging through snow, a woman staring through a window. We are easily swayed by lies, but know that our reality is the reality we live in and the reality we talk about in whispers, the voice says. At the end, the man and woman are shown in separate scenes with their fingers hovering over mobile phone screens with a link saying, contact CIA. This is my Russia. This will always be my Russia. I will endure. My family endure. We will live with dignity because of my actions, the narrator concludes. Asked about the video, Kremlin spokesperson Dmitry Peskov, you know, the dude with the mustache, white hair, said he
had the Kremlin spokesperson, yeah.
Yeah, Dmitry. Had not paid attention to it and added, I am convinced that our special services are monitoring the space in the necessary way. He added, we all know perfectly well that the CIA and other Western intelligence agencies are not reducing their activity on the territory of a country. Some Russians reacted skeptically to the video on social media, saying it looked like a provocation by Russia's FSB security service. So, yeah, they're already thinking this might be another false flag or something, too. Oh,
right.
My goodness. It's gosh. Like a, this is like a freaking game going on behind the scenes.
Like, we think we're mind-fucked in the United States, but I bet you the people in Russia are so mind-fucked, bro. Yeah. All they know is mind-fucked, too, just like we do here. Are we really all that different as citizens?
Yeah.
You know? We're just small dudes trying to work, trying to make money, trying to survive, trying to raise our family. And then you have this kind of influence going on.
Oh, yeah. We got some banana shit going on, I should say.
B-N-A-N-A-S. Bananas. Mm-hmm. Shit is bananas. B-A-N-A-N-A-S. Bananas. Remember that shit? That shit was a good song. But anyways.
Yeah, we got some crazy stuff going on, you know, before the counteroffensive starts. And the Russians, and it looks like the Ukrainians are about to take some ground, and the Russians are about to, are like kind of losing, especially in this video right here of a, of like one of the heads of the Russian mercenary group, Wagner group, being all pissed off that his, you know, forces are being, getting their ass kicked in this one city called Bakhmut right here. Like, he's like head of the Wagner mercenary group. Play this.
It's this old Russian dude, bald dude, yelling at us.
Yeah, Yevgeny Prigozhin, the head of Russia's Wagner group, released a heated video. Prigozhin is standing among what he claims to be killed in action Wagner fighters, and he angrily scolds Russian officials for Wagner's lack of ammunition. So basically, they're pissed off at the Russian government for not giving them ammo to fight the Ukrainians in Bakhmut, which is a huge battle going on right now. So
this propaganda video that we're watching is this bald dude that's hella mad, saying that my men died because you didn't give us enough ammunition. And he's speaking to Putin, essentially. He's talking to the Kremlin. He's talking to the Russian forces and saying, you guys want to start a war, but you don't supply us with ammunition. We're all going to keep dying. But to me, just watching that and just saying that out loud sounds like it's something to make it seem like Russia's not doing well to the opposite, the opposing side.
Yeah,
it could be propaganda. Propaganda in its own way, too.
Yeah, I mean, Wagner Group is already allegedly tied to the Russian government already.
Right.
Yeah, they're like mercenaries.
I was going to say paramilitary is like a little bit different than just the military. Like, they're like special ops doing shit that no one knows about type of shit.
Yeah. And this is supposed to be Bakhmut right here, which is a city where the Wagner mercenaries are fighting Ukrainians. Yeah, look, Bakhmut's on fire, as you could see, with incendiaries being dropped on, you know, this is in East Ukraine. You see this?
Bakhmut.
Yeah, Bakhmut.
It is on fire, folks.
Yeah, a tense battle between Ukrainian forces and Russian forces, but mostly against, you know, Wagner mercenaries.
I would encourage the listener to look up videos on this stuff at some point, even on Instagram, whatever. Wars of the 21st is a good Instagram to check out to find a bunch of random content, which it could be propaganda, blah, blah, blah. But the reality is whether it's propaganda or not, the footage is real. And this scene of Bakhmut is literally like on fire. Like, it's crazy to look at a city that was like full of people and now is just on fire, getting bombed. It's very real. It's crazy to watch. It's not even like when the United States would be fucking bombing the Middle East where they'd still be killing hella civilians, but yet it'd be like in this desert type terrain where there wouldn't be as large of a population. This is like a dense fucking city, like Fresno, getting bombed and just being on fire and everyone having to flee and die.
Yeah. And this is in one of the newly annexed territories that Russia claimed recently after another rigged election. So basically, you know, this is supposed to be kind of part of the counteroffensive that the Ukrainians are trying to do right now, too. So
it's so interesting, too, because like a lot of these revolts and a lot of the anger that seems to come about between the Russian and Ukrainian conflict has to do with voter fraud, voter suppression, someone fucking with the votes, someone fucking with who's going to be the leader. And it's so interesting to see that the last couple of years, everyone thought Donald Trump got jacked of his votes and somehow was actually still the president, and that they stole the vote and they stole the position, right? Biden stole it from him. The Democrats stole it from the Republicans. That's what the narrative was on the right. And it's so interesting to see how hot that makes people. It pisses them off, bro. Makes them want to go to civil war over it.
Yeah.
And you watch these other things across the world, and of course it riles people up. It works. Mm-hmm. So if that was some kind of operation to rile up the American people, to promote domestic terrorism so we can all be spied on up our asses all day long, it worked, and it's working. Just saying. If that were the case, big if here, but definitely vote, people fucking with votes and being undemocratic makes people angry.
Yeah.
Makes them light cities on fire and shit.
Yeah, and consider, and I want to move on to a different country that we haven't really talked about, which is Japan. And how, you know, some of the themes of our episodes is, you know, global affairs and how they intertwine and how different or may not be so different they might be to the American public.
Right.
One of those countries I like to talk about is Japan and, you know, how people perceive Japan and how, you know, we have a wrong idea what Japan really is. So we are gonna...
I'm Googling map in Japan. We're in the area, folks. For those that don't know, because maybe you're geographically dumb like me, it is directly west from California. If you were to just keep on flying straight west, you'd hit Japan before you'd hit it probably anything else.
Yeah, so Japan is an island country, which is east of the Korean Peninsula and China.
And a little south.
And a little
southeast of Russia.
Yes. Speaking of which, they kind of have a little bit of a dispute with the Russians over some tiny islands right now, too.
In between them and Japan?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Russians claim them, the Japanese claim them, and they even have a little dispute with an island between South Korea, too.
What's going down, podcast listener? I imagine that you drive a car when you're out and aboutin'. You might even have a motorcycle, per se. And I think that most people that live in the society we live in have a home of some sort. On those things, do you have insurance? That is my question to you. And if you do not, it seems like it's time to get you some. What are you doing out there listening to a podcast? Because if you are, at the same time simultaneously, you could be calling Alfredo Vargas over at Academy West Insurance to provide you with top-notch service. Give him a call at 559-638-3800. Do you not have a license? That doesn't seem to be a problem. He can set you up. Do I know how? I have no idea, but he can set you up. He claims to know. Are you anything like me? And when you were younger, got into some trouble, had a DUI, and needed an SR-22 insurance? Maybe? I hope not, but if you do, Alfredo Vargas over at Academy West Insurance can set you up with the free SR-22. You can find Alfredo looking sharp in the suit on 998 North Manning Avenue in Reedley, California, or you can give him a jingle down there at the shop at 559-638-3800. Be sure to tell him that you heard about him on the Symbiosis Now podcast, and he will set you up ASAP with all your insuring needs. Thank you, Alfredo, for sponsoring the podcast. And now, let's get back to the show, folks.
Well, there's like a lot of misconceptions that people have in Japan, you know. Like, some people think that, oh, they're like a perfect society. Or some people say, oh, it's like one of the worst countries you could live. And some, you know, it's not really like that, though. And it has to do with their culture and their history and stuff, too.
Well, I'll say this, Toyotas are badass vehicles,
man. Oh, yeah, those are cool.
So the Japanese know how to make a good vehicle. That's all I know.
Yeah, and I know this guy on Twitter named Oliver Gia, who is a journalist who lives in Japan, who publishes a newspaper. Works for a news site, and... he talks about, you know, living in Japan and how it's like over there compared to the United States and how it's not really how we may perceive it. Especially when it comes to, like, culture wars and, you know, politics and everything else. Like, you know how here in the United States and in Europe, kind of, we make a big fuss over the culture war and stuff like that?
Yeah.
Over there in Japan, they don't give a shit about the culture war. They have their own things to worry about.
So what is that doesn't affect them? what would make them culturally not see the culture, quote unquote, war that you're talking about? What would make Japan like immune to such a thing?
Well, I think it has to be with the differences, you know, in, you know, how society is like compared to here. Like, it's like very different over there than it is here. Like they see Americans, you know, make a big fuss over stuff, and they like look at us at bewilderment. Like, what is going on?
So they haven't yet been broken by the technocratic system that is at hand, perhaps.
Yeah, and I mean, they do have their own issues and stuff too, especially how they have like a low birth rate going on right now, and they're like scared to death about that too.
I wonder why that is.
Yeah, I think it has to do with the work culture they have over in Japan. Like, I'm about to look this up right now.
I think the Japanese culture is beautiful.
Yeah, it's a very awesome culture. And I've always wanted to go to...
Fascinating.
And I've always wanted to go to Japan, too.
Sapporo's a good beer. I said
it. Oh, yeah. I love Sapporo.
Could slap a couple Sapporos down for sure. So maybe that's why. They're drinking Sapporo. They're not getting on Facebook and fucking TikTok. They got their own version, maybe. They're not sissified like the West is, where we're all sensitive about every little fucking thing.
Yeah, that's one thing I've noticed, too.
Constantly connected and shit.
That's one thing I've noticed, too. And, you know, they don't really make a big fuss over stuff. Like, I mean, there are some issues that they care about and talk about, too. And the thing is that, want to know something crazy? You know how a lot of the American youth here, especially the younger crowd, is all politically active, you know, always talking about politics?
Or they think they are, but yeah, I get what you mean.
Yeah. Japanese youth don't really give a shit about politics.
Well, I remember when we didn't. The American youth didn't. Yeah. When we were kids, we didn't. I didn't care about Obama getting elected as president when I was fucking 13 years old. I didn't give a fuck. I didn't see what was going on in the Afghanistan war. I didn't fucking know shit. I didn't care. I didn't want to think about it. Go to history class, learn some bullshit about that happened then. Wars don't happen now. That's how I felt when we were younger. But now, you make a good point. The American youth is very involved with political games, propaganda on another level that maybe we were used to growing up, but it's another level now. It's like deep state type shit that people are dealing with now. And maybe Japan just, it hasn't hit yet. They haven't allowed it to encompass them yet. But eventually, you keep giving, you know, your two-year-old an iPad. Maybe over time, they'll all be indoctrinated into the technocratic way that the system is falling around us globally.
Yeah, and...
But there will always be those little pockets of immunity, you could say, or resilience amongst the global system that is at hand right now.
Yeah, and... And, yeah, like I said, Japanese youth aren't really involved in politics, really. I mean, they may care, but they're not, like, super heavily, you know, posting memes, posting, fighting with people online.
Right.
Not to mention that many far right and far left, you know, individuals, you know, politicians don't even get elected. Not to mention that third parties are seen as a joke over there, too. And... I mean, there are some issues with, you know, with Japanese nationalism, like you do have some nationalist, you know, politicians over there, but Japanese nationalism is, like, different from, like, American or other countries' nationalism, too, because, you know, the differences in history and culture, and, you know, unlike other places, you know, a lot of people give the Japanese shit for this for them trying to play victims in World War II because they got bombed. Even though they were aligned with the Axis powers like Nazi Germany and Fascist Italy and stuff like that too.
Right, which we tend to kind of forget about.
Yeah, but we forget, I mean, because of our relations with Japan, you know, it's like super friendly and, you know, it's like mutual trust. We forget that we were at war with Japan back
then.
That
they the Japanese are the ones that bombed Pearl Harbor.
Yeah, and we use our atomic weapons against them. Like,
right.
Only time ever, and you know, it's just nothing, and it's just never again. You know, we shouldn't do that stuff ever again. And you know, after that, you know, we helped them rebuild, remade amends, and, you know, there was not really any anti-American animosity as there is back then, unless it's like super nationalist and stuff, too.
But it does show, you make a good point, it does show that at one time, culturally, it was very likely that their interests would align with the Fascist Party of Italy mm-hmm. and the Nazi Party of Germany somehow, just by the fact that maybe they didn't all get along, but their interests were similar globally. Right? Yeah. So that's very interesting to think about. I wonder if even though the Italian nation is maybe a little different now too, I wonder if the Italian youth are very involved with politics.
I mean, like I said, you know, European youth and American youth and Canadian youth are like more politically involved than, you know, youth in Japan too. And another thing about Japan is that they have a very strict work culture over there as well. Mm-hmm. Like, you know how here usually people tend to have like a 9-to-5 job. Well, I'm actually looking at this article from this guy I follow named Oliver Gio, who is an American who lives in Japan. And Japan is notorious for having such a very harsh, not really harsh, but very, very strict work, strong work culture, to the point where unpaid overtime is illegal and Hold on, let me see. I'm just looking at this article. I'm sorry if I'm pausing for a moment. It says, because of the collectivized nature of most Japanese office workers, it's not an uncommon occurrence to stay on for hours after you were supposed to finish. So basically, most Japanese work overtime, and they are encouraged to leave work after their section manager goes home. So yeah, they have a very strict work culture.
Do they get paid for it?
Yeah, they get paid.
So they get paid overtime, though.
Hold on.
I'm not saying it's okay, but I'm just saying, like, God, you could compare it to the packing house or the winery down the road here in Reedley Parlier, California. You know, those guys work freaking 12-hour shifts 7 days a week, you know, and they don't get to leave until after their manager's gone probably either, you know, but they get paid for the overtime, so they're down to do it. I mean, it's a rough job. Yeah, but the reality is people are down to make the money.
Yeah. Over here, people get paid for overtime work. But over here in Japan, they don't get paid for overtime at all, apparently. Although they've gotten a little better at it, though.
So they get paid hourly, probably, but they get paid like as if it's salary. Like, you have to get the job done, but if you don't get it done in 8, you still work until it's done.
Yeah,
even though you only get paid for 8.
Yeah, basically they work to the bone over there.
So, and you were leading into that being the reason why there's a low birth rate right now. It's not that they're like reproductively low in fecundity or something. Yeah. It's more like because they're so busy all the time, they're not out mating and thinking about having a family and carrying on the next generation. They're just like, I have to work right now to make money. All day, every day. Yeah, I don't even go out. I don't even see girls.
Yeah, it's also ingrained in their culture, too, considering that Japan is like a collectivist culture compared to other countries. Oh, and I noticed we have tattoos, Tyler. Uh-huh. Yeah, did you know that you'd be freaking looked down upon if you were in Japan right now for your tattoos?
Yeah.
Because over in Japan, tattoos are looked down upon because of their association with the Yakuza, which is the Japanese mafia.
Oh, so I'm a mafioso over in Japan, bro. That's what's up, G. Yeah. No, dude, that's so funny, though, because I'd probably be in trouble for a lot of things. Like, I know in certain Asian cultures, like, you can't spit on the ground, and I spit all the time. You can't open the door or prop the door open with your foot, which I do all the time. You know, I'd probably be just X'd. I'd have to really do a little study sesh of what I could and could not do if I went across overseas, bro. I'd be calling people dude, and they'd be like, you just called that old man a dude. You're going to jail. Like, I'd be like, what? They'd strip me down, booty check me right there, looking for weed up my ass.
Yeah.
Put me in prison for a decade. And the United States wouldn't give a fuck.
Yeah, and thing is that, unlike here in the United States where weed is becoming legal, depending on where you live.
Yeah.
Pot is illegal in Japan. You could go to freaking jail for it.
I was going to say this earlier. Perhaps some of these nations where they're not so politically involved, maybe there's less psychedelic use. Sounds like a stretch, but just hear me out. a lot of people that happen to eat psychedelics often become more anti-establishment because they see the manipulation. They see them being taken advantage of. Something about psychedelics just opens your mind to the reality that you're just one piece of the puzzle. You're a pawn in the war of politics and resources and the progress of the nation, essentially. Maybe in these, some of these little pockets of the world where they don't have that, it's completely outlawed. They're super strict. Like, you wouldn't even be able to smuggle it in any way, shape, or form. Then being on an island makes sense that it'd be much harder to get on the island. Mm-hmm. That maybe they're just less anti-establishment sentiment.
Yeah, and not to mention that they have an emperor still, though. It's like more as a figurehead, like the King of England, rather than just an authority figure. Like,
did you see that coronation of the King of England?
I actually forgot to see
where they like came on his forehead and put jizz on his forehead.
Oh my goodness.
No, they anointed him with oil, though. Like, you know, they did all this funky shit and he said a bunch of weird shit. He didn't look happy, not even 1 second in the whole thing. It was all about glory. It was all about carrying on war with Russia, I bet you, deep down. They need a leader right now because they're ready to go. The Brits are wild fools, dude. Oh, I'm just saying, the Brits are always down to go to war, it seems like, right? Know, like, they're the war masters of the world.
I noticed that the freaking British are very anti-Russia right now. Like, they, like us, spend the most money on Ukrainian military aid to the point where they just gave them Storm Shadow missiles.
Right, and I want to say that Zelensky came to the...
to the Prime Minister, I forget his name, though. It's not Boris Johnson anymore.
He's some dope in the UK.
Yeah, he's some Indian dude, I think so.
But the reality is they just gave him a bunch of weapons and said, yeah, hey, do what you got to do. These missiles go really far.
Yeah.
So you don't have to just bomb your border. You can bomb fucking deep into the country if you want.
Yeah, but they have to promise us not to use them against the Russian mainland or else that's crossing a line and, you know, shit's fucked.
Well, you point it a little bit higher and it's going to go a lot farther. So they better have it really on lock when they're shooting off these missiles then, bro. They can go hella far.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? Because giving someone a loaded gun and saying, but don't shoot anyone with it. When you're in war, it's kind of like, what do you mean? Like, you just gave him that. But my hands are clean because I told him not to, right? It's kind of similar to when we were funding a lot of World War II back in the day. We were making weapons and sending them to the Brits, sending them to Europe, sending them to our allies, even though we weren't in war. But it was by default that we were basically funding the war, and we were involved. We were providing weaponry and saying, oh, but don't get us involved. But eventually, the inevitability is you will be involved with such an endeavor.
Yeah. I mean, we give Japan weapons too, especially missile defense systems, and we even have some military bases that help with the Japanese self-defense force too. And recently, they are looking to beef up their military because they're afraid of China and North Korea, so they want to beef up their military over in Japan as well. In the event of, you know, anything going wrong over there.
Right. It's very interesting. So, what were we talking about Japan for, though?
Oh, I just wanted to kind of try to connect to what we were talking about, because we usually talk about, you know, how things are in, like, Ukraine, Russia, and these other countries, and how different it may be, and how similar we may see each other in our misconceptions about them, and their misconceptions about us.
Right.
So, I kind of wanted to bring Japan into this, because, you know, I've always wanted to visit Japan. I've always been interested in, like, Japanese culture and stuff like that, and the history of Japan, and yeah, Japan is actually pretty different from a lot of the countries, you know, we talked about here as well. Like, have you noticed anything when I was what I was talking about Japan? You know, their work culture being super strict, and their more collectivized, you know, societal system.
They'd be easier to fall into the war. Do you think? Or are you saying that they'd be less likely to get involved with this proxy war?
Well, I mean, they only give in a little bit of aid to Ukraine, though. Like, they're pretty much pro-Ukraine right now, just like every Western-aligned country. And they're pretty much, you know, afraid of China, too. And they even have their own issues with the Russians. Like I said, like with the Kuril Islands, like the Russians claim them, the Japanese claim them. Although they also see Russia as an important trading partner as well because of the vicinity over there, too. So, in the event of any potential conflict or escalation, they may be more inclined to support the Ukrainians and us, too, in that regard.
Right. I trip out on this whole conversation, especially because when you think about, like, growing up, history class, seventh grade, shit like that. Mm-hmm. I'm sitting there. I'm looking at the map. They're telling us this is the map of the world. This is what it looks like. These are the nations of the world. And I sat there, and I would just look at it like these are the permanent nations of the world. That they've – almost like they've always been there. And then later you learn, like, oh, this is how those nations came to be. This area actually used to be this, and now it's broken up into these three nations and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. But that is still happening. Yeah. It still is like a living, breathing situation. Yeah. It's an organism of itself, the way that humans transition and change ideologies and cultures and whatnot around areas of the world globally. Yes. And it's really interesting to think about how, like, what maps could have been in the past. When someone finds a map that's really old that states that this was Atlantis and this was this and this was that and blah, 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 this was Africa, this is where Mansa Musa was and stuff. But that's just according to that time frame, which gives you great insight into the time. But it could have been, like, according to who, though? Someone traveled to every nation to say, are you willing to say that this is your country? No, I don't think so. I'm sure it was still whoever drew it was drawing it to their best ability to say, I'm pretty sure this is what this nation right here is and will sustainably be for the next 10 to 100 years so we can make it an actual official map.
Yeah, I mean, map making back then was kind of weird depending on who was traveling, especially during the age of exploration.
It'd be like when Christopher Columbus came, it'd be like, you are here with an X, and then, like, it just has an arrow pointing west and be like, this is where you're going.
Yeah, he thought it was in India and stuff too, right. And you know, I think we could talk about this in another episode because I'm currently reading a history book about the Republic of Pirates, which is an unrecognized area in, like, the Bahamas where there was a bunch of piracy and pirates like Blackbeard and all of them going around doing pirate shit, you know.
It's like Tortuga in Pirates of the Caribbean. Oh, it's like the island where all the pirates go to party.
Yeah, and
central headquarters, pirate headquarters.
Yeah, basically it was like pirate mania over there. Like, it's a very interesting book to where I like to talk about some of the stuff I found in another episode.
That'd be amazing. That'd be great. I'd love to talk about pirates next time.
Yeah, and I could also talk about my upcoming trip to Nashville too.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah, I do want to check out Andrew Jackson's Hermitage over there because I like historical stuff, so I want to check that out, even though Andrew Jackson was a wild fucking president.
Yeah, he was, bro. I've learned some things about this Jackson on the $20 bill fucker. He's a crazy dude.
Yeah, it was a crazy MF-er.
That guy was wild. That guy was, like, methed up practically, I'm sure. He was probably out there tweaking in the back, yelling at Bobby, you know, saying, make more of this shit, you know. And there's a little trailer.
Imagine. Yeah, getting coked up in his mansion in Nashville.
But hey, we'll close this out. This is a lot of information, I feel like, for the listener to intake in an hour setting. Bradley, we're super grateful for you coming back through, man. I want to leave on the note, like I was kind of saying, that we are on the globe of the earth, but the nations in which we think exist do shift and change over time. Right now, is Ukraine still on a map? Ukraine? Probably. But at what point is it now Russia, or is it smaller of a nation and Russia's kind of encroached on it? No one knows. It's all just a hypothetical boundary, really.
Yes.
And everything's always up in the air. And something else I want to say to close on too is that I'm not with Russia. I'm not with Russia, but I ain't trying to fight no regular Russian dude either. But the reality is the United States often meddles in random countries, invades sovereign nations, but doesn't call it an invasion. Considers it just, we're trying to help them establish democracy, but slowly take it over and sometimes leave it worse than they were before. Like Afghanistan, just as one example that's recent. Mm-hmm. We talk about a bunch of them. But the reality is we've meddled in foreign sovereign nations often and fucked shit up.
Yeah, it's always.
And so Russia, Putin might just be like, I want to do some fucking Western shit, but Russian style. And that maybe is what's playing out. And in a weird way, the West being pro
Ukraine?
Yeah, but being pro turmoil, being pro resource extraction, maybe would actually inadvertently be on board with this whole operation. Is an even bigger mind fuck to think about. Yeah, you know, be on the side of Ukraine, but really it's just to establish this opposition so therefore it can be considered a conflict. Because without opposition, there is no conflict, you know?
Yes.
But we're existing on a globe with billions of other people. And we got to figure this out. And we have to remember that we are symbiotically connected, whether that's a parasitic relationship or a mutual beneficial relationship. We have to decide, and we have to make that a reality.
Yes.
Thank you, Brad, for coming on again, man.
You're welcome. I'm looking forward to talk about, you know, pirates, kind of, you know, see how it ties into everything. I like to talk about history.
Oh, I'm going to study some pirate stuff for this next episode, me and you together.
Yeah,
and because I'm stoked for it.
I also want to talk about my Nashville trip, too, because there's like a lot of historical buildings over there, too, and some cultural stuff as well.
That's so very prevalent to the United States trajectory and history, for sure.
Yeah.
I'm excited for it. Folks, look out for that episode in the future. Mm-hmm. Bradley, it's been a pleasure.
This podcast was created by the Symbiosis Now Network and can be found on Instagram for clips, highlights, videos, blah, 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 at symbiosis.now.network. And you can listen to the Symbiosis Now podcast as well as the Cali Ag podcast on Spotify, Apple, and all the platforms. Listener, be sure to tell your friends about the Symbiosis Now Network.